A sudden silence hit the earth. If anything, it was worse than the noise. For a while, nothing happened. The great ships hung motionless in the sky, over every nation on Earth. Motionless, they hung huge, heavy, steady in the sky, a blasphemy against nature. Many people went straight into shock as their minds tried to encompass what they were looking at. The ships hung in the sky in much the same way the bricks didn't. And still nothing happened. Then there was a slight whisper, a sudden spacious whisper of an open, ambient sound. Every hi-fi set in the world, every radio, every television, every cassette recorder, every woofer, every tweeter, every mid-range driver in the world quietly turned itself on. Every tin can, every dustbin, every window, every car, every wine glass, every sheet of rusty metal became activated as an acoustically perfect sounding board. Before the earth passed away, it was going to be treated to the very ultimate in sound reproduction, the greatest public address system ever built. But there was no concert, no music, no fanfare, just a simple message. "People of Earth, your attention, please," the voice said. And it was wonderful. Wonderful, perfect, quadraphonic sound with distortion levels so low as to make a brave man weep. "This is Prostetnik Vogan Jeltz of the Galactic Hyperspace Planning Council," the voice continued. "As you will no doubt be aware, the plans for development of the outlying regions of the galaxy require the building of a hyperspatial express route through your star system, and regrettably, your planet is one of those scheduled for demolition. The process will take slightly less than 2 of your Earth minutes. Thank you." The PA died away. Uncomprehending terror settled on the watching people of Earth. The terror moved slowly throughout the gathered crowds, as if they were an iron filing on a sheet board, and a magnet was moving beneath them. Panic sprouted again, desperate, fleeing panic. There was nowhere to flee to. Observing this, the Vogons turned on their PA again, and as it said, "There's no point in acting all surprised about it. All the planning charts and demolition orders have been on display in your local planning department in Alpha Centauri for 50 of your Earth years, so you've had plenty of time to lodge any formal complaint, and it's far too late to start making a fuss about it now." The PA fell silent again, and its echo drifted off across the land. The huge ships turned slowly in the sky with its easy power. On the underside of each, a hatchway opened, an empty black square. And by this time, somebody somewhere must have manned a radio transmitter, located a wavelength, and broadcast a message back to the Vogon ships to plead on behalf of the Earth. Nobody ever heard what they said. They only heard the reply. The PA slammed back into life again. The voice was annoyed, and it said, "What do you mean you've never been to Alpha Centauri? For heaven's sake, mankind, it's only 4 light years away. You know, I'm sorry, but if you can't be bothered to take an interest in local affairs, that's your own lookout. Energize the demolition beams." Light poured out of the hatchways. "I don't know," said the voice in the PA. "Apathetic, bloody planet, I've no sympathy at all." It cut off. There was a terrible, ghastly silence. There was a terrible, ghastly noise. There was a terrible, ghastly silence. The Vogon constructor fleet coasted away into the inky, starry void. Chapter 4. Far away on the opposite spiral arm of the galaxy, 500,000 light-years from the star Sol, Zaphod Beeblerox, president of the Imperial Galactic Government, sped across the seas of Damagron, his ion drive delta boat winking and flashing in the Damagron sun. Damagron, the hot. Damagron the remote. Damagron the almost totally unheard of. Damagron, secret home of the Heart of Gold. The boat sped on across the water. It would be some time before it reached the destination, because Damagron is such an inconceivably arranged planet. It consists of nothing but middling to large desert islands separated by pretty but annoyingly wide stretches of ocean. The boat sped on. Because of its topographical awkwardness, Damagron has always remained a deserted planet, This is why the Imperial Galactic Government chose Denegron for the Heart of Gold project, because it was deserted and the Heart of Gold project was so secret. The boat zipped and skipped across the sea that lay between the main islands of the only archipelago of any useful size on the whole planet. Zaphod Beeblerox was on his way home from the tiny spaceport on Easter Island. The name was an entirely meaningless coincidence. In Galactus speak, Easter means small, flat, and light brown. To the Heart of Gold Island, which, by another meaningless coincidence, was called France. One of the side effects of work on the Heart of Gold was a whole string of pretty meaningless coincidences, but it was not in any way a coincidence that today, the day of accumulation of the project, the great day of unveiling, the day that the Heart of Gold was finally to be introduced to a marveling galaxy, was also a day of culmination for Zaphod Beeblerox. It was for the sake of this day that he had first decided to run for the presidency, a decision that had sent shockwaves of astonishment through the Imperial Galaxy. Zaphod Beeblerox, president, not the Zaphod Beeblerox, not the president. Many had seen it as a clinching proof that the whole of known creation had finally gone bananas. Zaphod grinned and gave the boat an extra kick of speed. Zaphod Beeblerox, adventurer, ex-hippie, good-timer, crook, quite possibly, manic self-publicist, terribly bad at personal relationships, often thought to be completely out to lunch. President? No one had gone bananas, not in the way, anyway. Only 6 people in the entire galaxy understood the principle on which the galaxy was governed. And they knew once Zaphod Beeblerox had announced his intention to run as president, it was more or less a fait accompli. He was ideal president fodder. What they completely failed to understand was why Zaphod was doing it. He banged sharply, shooting a wild wall at the water at the sun. Today was the day. Today was the day that they would realize that Zaphod had been up to. Today was what Zaphod Beeblerox's presidency was all about. Today was also his 200th birthday. But that was just another meaningless coincidence. As he skipped his boat across the seas of Damagron, he smiled quietly to himself about what a wonderful, exciting day it was going to be. He relaxed and spread his two arms lazily along the sea back. He steered with an extra arm he'd recently had fitted just beneath his right one to help improve his ski boxing. "Hey," he cooed to himself, "you're a real cool boy, you." But his nerves sang a song shriller than a dog whistle. The island of France was about 20 miles long, 5 miles across the middle, sandy, and crescent-shaped. In fact, it seemed to exist not so much as an island on its own right, as simply a means of defining the sweep and curve of a huge bay. This impression was heightened by the fact that the inner coastline of the crescent consisted almost entirely of steep cliffs. From the top of the cliff, the land sloped slowly down 5 miles to the opposite shore. On top of the cliff stood a receptive committee. It consisted in large part of the engineers and researchers who had built the Heart of Gold. Mostly humanoid, but here and there were a few reptoid antimoniers. 2 or 3 greens, like Maxim Megalicious, an octopoid physicuralist or two, and a Huvulu. A Huvulu is a super intelligent shade of the color blue. All except the Huvulu were resplendent in their multicultural ceremonial lab coats. The Huvulu had been temporarily refracted into a freestanding prism for the occasion. There was a mood of immense excitement thrilling through all of them. Together, and between them all, they had to go to and beyond the furthest limits of the physical laws. Restructured the fundamental fabric of matter, strained, twisted, and broken the laws of possibility and impossibility. But still, the greatest excitement of all seemed to be to meet a man with an orange sash round his neck. An orange sash was what the president of the galaxy traditionally wore. It might not even have been much difference to them if they'd known exactly how much power the president of the galaxy actually wielded. None at all. Only 6 people in the galaxy knew that job of the galactic president was not to wield power, but to attract attention away from it. Zaphod Beeblerox was amazingly good at his job. The crowd gasped. Dazzled by sun and seamanship, as a presidential speedboat zipped around the headland into the bay. It flashed and shone as it came skating over the sea in a wide, skidding turn. In fact, it didn't need to touch the water at all, because it was supported on a hazy cushion of ionized atoms. But for just the effect, it was fitted with thin fin blades, which could be lowered into the water. They slashed sheets of water, hissing into the air, carved deep gashes in the sea, which swayed crazily, and sank back foaming in the boat's wake as it careered across the bay. Zaphod loved effect. It was what he was best at. He twisted the wheel sharply. The boat skidded round in a wild, skiffing skid beyond the cliff face and dropped to rest lightly on the rocking waves. Within seconds, he ran out onto the deck and waved and grinned over at 3 billion people. The 3 billion people weren't actually there, but they watched his every gesture through the eyes of a small robot tri-D camera, which hovered obsequiously in the air nearby. The antics of the president always made an amazingly popular tri-D. That's what they were there for. He grinned again. 3 billion and 6 people didn't know it, but today would be bigger antic than anyone had ever bargained for. The robot camera homed in for a close-up on the more popular of the two heads, and he waved again. He was roughly humanoid in appearance, except for the extra head and third arm. His fair tousled hair stuck out at random directions, his blue eyes glinted with something completely unidentifiable, and his chins were almost always unshaven. A 20-foot-high transparent globe floated next to his boat, rolling and bobbing and glistening in the brilliant sun. Inside it floated a wide semicircular sofa upholstered in glorious red leather. The more the glob bobbed and rolled, the more the sofa stayed perfectly still, steady as an upholstered rock. Again, all done for effect as much as anything. Zaphod stepped through the wall of the globe and relaxed on the sofa. He spread his two arms along the back and with a third brushed some dust off of his knee. His head shook about, smiling as he put his feet up. At any moment, he thought, he might scream. Water boiled up beneath the bubble. It seemed and sprouted. The bubble surged into the air, bobbing and rolling on the water spout. Up, up it climbed, throwing stilts of light at the cliff. Up it surged on the jet, the water falling from beneath it, crashing back into the sea hundreds of feet below. Zaphod smiled, picturing himself. A thoroughly ridiculous form of transport, but a thoroughly beautiful one. At the top of the cliff, the globe wavered for a moment, tipped into the railed ramp, rolled down it to a small concave platform, and riddled to a halt. To tremendous applause, Zaphod Belorok stepped out of the bubble, his orange sash blazing in the light. The president of the galaxy had arrived. He waited for the applause to die down and then raised an arm in greeting. "Hi," he said. A government spider sidled up to him and attempted to press a copy of his prepared speech into his hands. Pages 3-7 of the original version were the moment floating soggily on the Damacron Sea some 5 miles out from the bay. Pages 1 and 2 had been salvaged by a Damacron frond, crested eagle, and had already become incorporated into the extraordinarily new form of nest which the eagle had invented. It was constructed largely of a papier-mâché, and it was virtually impossible for a newly hatched baby eagle to break out of it. The Damacron frond crested eagle had heard of the notion of survival of the species, but wanted no truck with it. Zaphod Belorok would not be needing his set speech, and he gently deflected the one being offered to him by the spider. "Hi," he said again. Everyone beamed at him, or at least nearly everyone. He singled out Trillian from the crowd. Trillian was a girl that Zaphod had picked up from recently while visiting a planet, just for fun, incognito. She was slim, darkish humanoid, with long waves of black hair and a full mouth, and an odd little knob of a nose and ridiculously brown eyes. With her red headscarf knotted in that particular way, and her long, flowing, silky brown dress, she looked vaguely Arabic. Not that anyone there had ever heard of an Arab, of course. The Arabs had very recently ceased to exist, and even when they had existed, they were 500,000 light-years from Damacron. And Trillian wasn't anybody in particular, or so Zaphod claimed. She just went around with him and rather a lot told him what she thought of him. "Hi, honey," he said to her. She flashed him a quick, tight smile and looked away. Then she looked back for a moment and smiled more warmly, but this time he was looking at something else. "Hi," he said to a small knot of creatures from the press who were standing nearby, wishing that he would stop saying hi and get on with the quotes. He grinned at them particularly because he knew that in a few moments he would be giving them one hell of a quote. The next thing he said, though, was not a lot of use to them. One of the officials of the party had irritably decided that the president was clearly not in a mood to read the deliciously turned speech that had been written for him, and had flipped the switch on the remote control device in his pocket. Away in front of them, a huge white dome that bulged against the sky cracked down in the middle, slowly folded itself down into the ground. Everyone gasped, although they had known perfectly well what it was going to do, and because they built it that way. Beneath it, land covered a huge starship, 150 meters long, shaped like a sleek running shoe, perfectly white and mind-bogglingly beautiful. At the heart of it, unseen, lay a small gold box which carried within it the most brain-wrenching device ever conceived. A device that made this starship unique to the history of the galaxy. A device after which the ship had been named, the Heart of Gold. "Wow," said Sapphire Beetle Rocks to the Heart of Gold. There wasn't much else he could say. He said it again because he knew it would annoy the press. "Wow." The crowd turned their faces back toward him expectantly. He winked at Trillian, who raised her eyebrows and widened her eyes at him. She knew what he was about to say, and thought of him a terrible show-off. "That is really amazing," he said. "That really is truly amazing. That is so amazingly amazing, I'd like to think I want to steal it. A marvelous presidential quote, absolutely true to the form." The crowd laughed appreciatively. The newsmen gleefully punched buttons on their sub-Etha Newsmatic, and the president grinned. As he grinned, his heart screamed unbearably, and he fingered the small parasilomatic bomb that nestled quietly in his pocket. Finally, he could bear it no more. He lifted his heads up to the sky, let out a wild whoop in major thirds, threw the bomb to the ground, and ran forward through the sea of suddenly frozen, beaming smiles.